You're listening to the Nuff Said podcast, real strategies for customer success.
Hey everyone, it's Chris and Nick, co-founders at Nuff Said. Today on the Nuff Said podcast, we asked Matt at User Testing, how do I move my career beyond just the head of customer success?
So the first step is really to lift your head up and look around your company for problems that matter to your CEO, which they don't have time to take on themselves. Then you want to tell your CEO that you'll own solving the problem. And the third step is you want to partner with the leader of the organization where the problem exists. So understand their priorities, connect solving your problem to them achieving their priorities, and then partner with them to solve it. So rinse and repeat. Your goal is to create a track record of solving important problems for your CEO so that when the opportunity arises, you're in the first position to get the COO role. So that's the TLDR. Let's dive in.
Well, first, thanks for having me, you guys. I'm Matt Zellin. I'm the COO at User Testing. And User Testing is on a mission to bring real human insights to every experience. And essentially what we do is connect companies with customers or prospects and get real feedback, live feedback. We're a video first platform, but real feedback on any experience that they're creating and building or delivering to their end customers. So to take those insights and incorporate into how they execute their processes and how they deliver to their end customers is part of our passion and what we do. My role as the COO is, you could argue, somewhat unique. From an operational standpoint, I have enterprise systems, IT, infrastructure, business operations, security and compliance. And so I really focus on like, how do we execute as a company and, you know, how do we help our employees do the best work of their lives? So do we have the right access to tools, information they need to be successful? And I also own support and professional services and our education program. That's really about like, how do we provide the same type of things to our customers to help our customers build the best experiences they can through scalable means. So that's kind of the duality of my role is how do I help our company escalate and execute at scale? And how do we help our customers execute in scaled programs?
We'll talk about this more later, but you recently made a transition from Chief Customer Officer to COO. Before that, you were running the whole customer function. And so we'll ask you some more questions about that. But I do have to drop an extra note here, which is that although User Testing focuses on and services very large businesses, enterprises, Fortune 100, Nuff Said has used User Testing as one of its secret weapons to iterate towards product market fit. At this point, I think we've done 300 or 400 user tests and interviews using the User Testing platform. So for any startups that are out there, I think User Testing is just as appropriate for a very early stage company as a very large Fortune 10. So Matt, what's something fun or unusual about you that we might not learn in the normal course of working together?
Wow. Fun or unusual. Well, this is a story that maybe any of your listeners, if I meet in person, I'll go into more detail, but I was a competitive swimmer. Growing up, I was a competitive swimmer in high school and actually had a chance to compete in college as well. And I can't believe I'm telling the story, but it's a good, fun story anyways. But in one of those meets, you know, think of a larger swim meet and everybody has the requisite competitive Speedo, you know, swimsuit. In one of the races, I was so focused on winning the race that I forgot to tie my suit. So as I went off the blocks and jumped in, my suit like ripped all the way down to my ankles and I was swimming the butterfly. So the first kick, it came off and now I'm completely naked in front of like hundreds of people, let alone my grandma watching this, right? But the reason that the unique kind of aspect or story of this is this was in college. I was 20 years old and word got out. It went across Associated Press. And then ultimately I was a guest on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno to talk about the story and everything. It was a crazy experience as a college kid. A bunch of my friends actually road tripped out to be in the stands. It was unreal experience, but that catapulted my 15 minutes of fame early on in life. That's for sure.
And, well, look, the takeaway is I look great at a Speedo and I'm famous when it comes off. That's
I'm just going to say for the audience, thank goodness it was a butterfly and not a backstroke.
Oh, yep. I've actually used that joke many, many times. So
yeah. All right. That's a great story to kick us off and jump into our main topic, which is you've made a jump in your career that many customer leaders would like for themselves, which is you made the jump from Chief Customer Officer to COO. We're even seeing some examples of people going from CCO to CEO. But can you talk a little bit about how did you, you know, how was this jump possible? What things did you accomplish? What skills did you onboard? What relationships did you create? How were you able to make this transition in your career?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. And, you know, it's not like I started out on a path to become a COO. You know, I'm genuinely passionate about, you know, customer success. And so achieving the chief customer officer role a few companies ago was kind of like my pinnacle at that point. It's, you know, something I'm passionate about, I really enjoy doing. And part of it's like, I just like solving problems. And in the last couple of companies where I've been the COO, there's a natural fit, I think, in those organizations around needing a leader that can look at problems across the organization and kind of solve those problems. So two companies ago, a company called Appsyn, the CEO is a fantastic storyteller and really enjoys getting involved in the go-to-market functions side of the business, like marketing and sales. And so that allowed kind of this gap where I could help execute in some other areas of the business. So the COO at that company, I had some operational functions, including like HR, along with the traditional customer success functions, so that the role of the COO was a great fit for what that company needed. And even, you know, at user testing, I started out as the chief customer officer. And to your point earlier, we made a bit of a change recently where we shifted the retention responsibility in the team, so renewals and customer success, into the revenue organization. And so that opened up an opportunity for me to kind of have an expanded impact in other areas of the business around, like I talked about, the infrastructure, the operational aspects of it, along with some of the other customer success functions. And so it was just a fit for user testing. So anybody that I guess is aspiring to go from a, you know, chief customer officer to like CEO or a CCO to a COO, I don't think it can happen in a push. It has to be in a natural transition where there is a genuine need where you can add value to the organization. Because I think if it's, you know, you're pushing to be the COO, you might end up in a contentious situation for whatever, where it doesn't necessarily fit. And for me, it was just I was in the right place. I had the right skill set and the knack of trying to solve problems to address something that the company really needed. So that's how I transitioned basically from CCO to COO and have a partner, I guess, in a CEO that identifies that value and that need. And it's kind of along that journey to say like, yeah, let's make this move. Let's make this transition for the betterment of the company.
You've talked about the COO role often being the complement to the CEO in the sense that the CEO offloads stuff that they either don't need, they don't want to focus on at the moment, or maybe they don't have the skills to focus on. And so what types of skills do you think people should onboard into their toolkit so that when the opportunity is available, they can actually take on the things that the CEO often doesn't want to do? Because I think there's a kind of an archetype of a CEO, like great storyteller, you know, get in front of big customers. Then there's all the stuff that they generally either don't want to focus on or don't have the time to focus on.
Yep. I think part of it is like taking ownership, having the like just building that muscle of seeing a problem and knowing that it's a priority problem and taking a sense of ownership to solve that problem. I think oftentimes, you know, my boss is the CEO, and if I'm not doing things that add value to my boss or the company in general, like it's not going to work. And so I think in reality, just having that ability to say like, hey, this is a problem and aligning on it's a priority problem. And you know what? Don't worry about this because I'm going to fix it. Is a better skill set than a lot of other things. Like people may talk about like operational excellence and you're detail oriented, like that stuff can be learned, but just having the knack to say like, that's a problem we're not doing really well. Like this needs to be fixed and you know, I'm gonna fix it. And then you go and fix it, that's huge value. Like, and I think if you have the ability to kind of learn on the fly and fix a problem, regardless of whether it's in your sweet spot, that's even more value because not every CEO is the same and not every CEO has the same strengths and you know weaknesses. And so you have to be able to add value and address problems regardless of if it's in customer success or operational, just have the knack to dive in, figure it out and you know drive towards an outcome in those situations.
And if someone's in a VP of customer success role, for example, would you recommend them only identifying problems within their own department, or is it important to identify problems that are broader and then go take ownership of solving those problems?
Yeah, it's a good question. It has to be broad beyond that, right? So many challenges that impact customer success are not specific to customer success. They're like cross-functional challenges across how you position and set expectations the right way. And then does the actual platform have the ability to deliver on those expectations? And then let alone the onboarding mentality and that kind of stuff. So I think sometimes when you're driving customer success, like you can't think of it as a specific customer success challenge. It's a cross-functional, you know, company challenge and initiative that has to be addressed. I think therein lies the rub of owning the solution to that challenge. Doesn't necessarily mean if it's a cross-functional thing, it doesn't mean that you go in there and tell everybody else what to do. And this goes to the almost most critical skill set of any leader is the emotional intelligence to be able to collaborate across and understand the perspective of who you're working with and what their priorities are and what they need to get done. Because if you need, say, like the engineering team to fix an issue, but they're being held responsible to a release that is putting them under stress, like you got to be aware of that. And so like the sense of ownership, yes, in fixing those cross-functional issues means like get in the trenches with those guys, figure out what's going on, figure out like how you can influence an outcome in the right way that gets everybody on the same page. I think if you come in like a bull in a china shop, it's not going to end up not good. So that emotional empathy to understand somebody else's perspective in a given situation and then try to get everybody on the same page is hugely important.
I want to double click on something that you mentioned earlier, which we didn't address directly, which is your success organization has been moved under sales. And traditionally, we've seen success orgs that live under sales, and that's been a problem for the success leader because the sales leader thinks of top line and not necessarily retention. So now that you're in your COO role, what problems do you see popping up because those two orgs are together, specifically success and sales, and how are you resolving that and making sure the company's working well?
I don't know if I'm necessarily seeing much of a problem. I'm seeing some advantages from it. Now, the advantage of having those responsibilities separate are super clear because so many organizations do this. You have a bit of a healthy conflict between a focus on retention and fixing issues and the focus on growth. You know, the benefit that I've seen in the shift within user testing of taking that adoption and retention responsibility and aligning it with the field and growth organization is that, you know, I'm still in those executive meetings, you know, having a strong voice around things that we need to do to drive and facilitate adoption of the customer base. But now I have even stronger a partner in crime in our CRO around pounding their fist on things that we need to do to foster retention and adoption and success of our customers, because that is the foundation for growth, right? And so I don't necessarily see it as much of an issue or challenge coming out of this change. There actually has been some really strong positives that have come out of it. And then we're aligning on what are the things that we need to do on the product roadmap? What are the things we need to do in the infrastructure? What are the things we need to do in our systems that are driving success in our customers in general, let alone just our field engagement? I do think, you know, one of the things that just about every company kind of is challenged with is how do you balance the one-on-one engagements with, you know, scale influence. And so when you take a renewals organization and a CSM organization and put it under the sales organization, there's this kind of natural like, oh, well, I'm just going to reduce the coverage model and be, you know, focus more on cross sell, upsell and, you know, focus more on growth. And the only way that you can facilitate this and, you know, this is where my partner in crime on the CRO, David Satterwhite, and I align on is the things that I'm trying to do in our scale programs to influence adoption through our one-to-many programs, through our education programs, through some of the things we're doing through support, our customer outreach, allows David to look at being creative on who and where and when we apply a CSM. So if I have a program through our education program, or I'm addressing a need in creative ways through support, then great, our customers have that avenue to, you know, get answers to the questions and help them from a strategy standpoint and kind of influence, you know, at scale. And that frees up our field team to kind of mix and match who they engage with from a CSM standpoint or an SC standpoint. And so maybe that's one of the better things coming out of this is really true alignment on the scalable programs I'm trying to execute on our, you know, support and education programs that allow our field team to be far more effective on the one-to-one engagements where they can.
It seems like something that you're really good at, Matt, is getting things done through other peers on the executive team. It doesn't seem like a revenue leader or a product leader, you don't see them as obstacles for your team's success, the company's success. You keep referring to them as partners, and you talk about being able to very easily assert influence. How do you do that? Like, do you have any skill sets to accomplish this? I mean, how can you help us all level up and get better and do the things that you're doing at the executive level?
It's a good question. I guess my kind of gut reaction is it shouldn't be that hard. Like if you kind of see yourself as an adversary against another executive, you guys are on the same team. Like, go have a beer, figure it out, right? And so I think like this goes back to maybe the emotional intelligence side of things. I know David Satterwhite, our CRO, has a ton of stress, right? He's got numbers he needs to meet and all this stuff. Like if I'm aware of his perspective, his paradigm on the world, that just allows me to have a conversation around how can I help him be successful. If he wins, I win, right? And so I think if people are approaching it in a very selfish way, like only from their paradigm of the world, their paradigm of the business, you end up with this contentious battle that doesn't really understand the root cause, figure out how to address the root cause. Again, I'm a problem solver, like fix the problem. And if you can get two people in a room that genuinely want to fix the problem together, you win. If it's two people that don't even understand which problem they're trying to fix, like you're either going to fix the wrong problems or you're going to fight about what the problem is or how to fix it. And so I think it goes back to just that empathetic approach of being able to understand the shoes the other person is in, the view they have on the world, and then realize how you can help them be successful. And in the end, if you both win, then that's a huge win-win. I'm not a big fan of that contentious approach. I think that a lot of that conflict resolves when people understand what's really at the root of the problem you're trying to address.
Lots of CS leaders are known on the executive team as like the thoughtful customer champions, collaborative, really great to work with. And then they have a really hard time actually influencing any decisions in the sense that, the product roadmap still predominantly favors the sales leader and pricing decisions are pretty much owned just by marketing. And the sales leader acquires whatever customer they want, not just the ICP. So how does one go from being seen as the nice executive, the empathetic one, to the one who's actually driving and influencing major strategic decisions?
I'm a big fan of data-driven conversations. You take emotion out of it and you speak to facts and speak to data that will drive a lot of the discussion and, hopefully take emotion out of it, And so even from a customer success side of things, if somebody's really passionate about a barrier to success in a company or something that's impeding the success of their end customers, like there's got to be some data that supports that. And so bring that data to the table and have a data-driven conversation. And I guarantee you most of the emotion will be taken out of that. And I think it's when you come in and just say like, this is causing all the churn and don't have the data to back it up. Like somebody's going to call BS on it, right? So if you can keep it more of a data-driven, facts-driven conversation, I think emotion tends to be removed from the discussion.
I imagine your product leaders calling BS if you're not bringing data on churn. How have you found is the best way to work with product?
For me, where I learned the most is where we did this at Salesforce. Salesforce, we had this EWS, this early warning system, that was based on a ton of data, and it takes a lot of data. So if you're a growing company, it's really hard to get this level of data. When I was at Acton, for example, Acton had been around for a little while, but we didn't have a vast amount of data that Salesforce did, but we really didn't understand that early warning system, those data-driven triggers for leading and lagging indicators of success and failure. And so I actually brought in a statistician and took all the data that we had around our contracts, around adoption, around retention, around growth, and had somebody help us identify the statistically relevant points of our, data that we had on our customers that were indicators for success or failure. So if you're a growing company and you really don't have a strong subset of data yet, like get some help in analyzing the data that you do have, because there's still going to be golden nuggets of insights you can take out of that. At Salesforce, for example, the EWS, though, the early warning system, we knew, it was a score based on a whole slew of different things, whether or not companies use chatter, whether or not they, had allocated all their licenses out, whether or not they were, the amount of leads going through the system and all this stuff. we knew within a reasonable amount of doubt where somebody needed to be in the first 90 days and, you know, first 30, first 60, first 90 in their EWS score. And so on the roadmap side of things and influencing product, I could tell like, hey, these customers that aren't adopting because of this experience is causing a drop in EWS. If we make a change to this, it will make a massive change to the EWS overall and will make a massive impact to growth and trajectory. Like we're all incented to drive the success of the company and the success of our customers. And so if you can bring in some data points that show maybe an experience in a certain area of the product or lack of use because it's not an easily usable tool or feature on the platform is driving, you know, a drop in adoption, driving a drop in usage, then I think you can influence the product roadmap in that way. Because you got to, again, keep in mind that product person that's defining the roadmap is talking to that chief product officer or that CEO that's telling them to get this out next quarter. So you have to kind of have a very, again, fact-driven, data-driven conversation that raises awareness on that and understand who's also influencing the priorities on the roadmap. So if it is the CEO, I usually have a conversation with the CEO around, here's what I'm going to talk to the product team about. Does this make sense to you? And if I can get that person on board, then have a conversation with the product team. The product team is going to go back to the CEO and say, hey, listen, like, it looks like we should make a change. Are you okay with that? And if I've already prepped the CEO or the chief product officer that this is going to boil up to you, then it's a win-win for me across the board because I've just done that legwork already.
So we talk about 1.0 customer success leaders being leaders that focus on running a better CS team, so getting more operationally excellent in CS. But the 2.0 leader acknowledges that many of the reasons, maybe even most of the reasons for churn are not under CS's direct control. So the 2.0 leader focuses on driving and influencing decisions at the executive level with customer data.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the biggest challenge, and I had this early on in my career as a, you know, VP of customer success inside Salesforce and even going up to CCO, like customer success tends to be an afterthought, right? And so I think as a leader, it's on you to kind of build those relationships and engender a trust and respect across your peers so that when you do say something, it's actually factual and it's actually the right thing for us to do. And that takes a lot of time. And I think it also takes a little bit of maturity from an organizational standpoint. You know, I think companies that are, you know, very young and they're in growth mode are going to be really go-to-market driven, right? Marketing and growth. And I think once you get to a level of maturity where you're kind of, you can take a little bit of a deep breath, but maybe you finally got to a free cash flow, right? You're not margin positive, or maybe you're making money. That's great. You get a chance to then sit back and as a company, it matures a little bit, the perspective on the customer base and the opportunity in the customer base. And so you got to be a little bit aware of the maturity of the company and where they're at. But I think the biggest responsibility of a CCO is to try to help drive a stronger voice in the overall trajectory of a company. And that doesn't mean coming in and pounding your fists. And sometimes it does. And you got to know when it's right to come in and pound your fist on the table, especially when you have maybe another executive who doesn't take that collaborative approach, who takes that selfish approach. You got to stand up on the table and demand the voice of the customer for sure. But I think that's it's a balancing act. If, you know, for all of us that are customer success leaders, have to really learn how to get that voice and drive that voice and drive that influence in a way that engenders following. You know, my approach has been less combative and more influential than that. And others take a more combative approach. And I would argue it's much easier to row in the same direction with people in the same boat than it is to row in opposite directions. So, but I like that level one, level two. I think that level two is all around the maturity of the company and the CCO's ability to influence them.
And that's it for this week's episode of Nuff Said. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, head over to your podcast platform of choice and make sure you're subscribed. And tune in next week for more real customer success strategies. Nuff Said.